Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Feuerball und da!
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. We are back from our DFB Pokal hiatus, and now we're here to talk about match day 3. Previous weekend's action, which saw, well, a bit happening on and off the pitch. And let's just say some teams who have had a sputtering start to their campaigns are feeling a little bit worse for wear after the weekend's actions. We'll talk about all 9 games, and yeah, we should get into the action in a moment, but of course, alongside me to, I would say, lead the line for one of the best duos in Zweite Bundesliga football, it's Eva Lotte-Bolle. Eva, good morning to you. How are things?
Good morning. Well, I kind of got over the whole game situation. I mean, it's great. You worked 10 hours on a Saturday to rush home to see that game. I love my club. I also hate it a lot. Two things. I do apologize in advance if there are kids screaming in the background. I have my nephew and my niece here, and our walls are very, very thin. And I can't do anything against that. I'm very sorry for that. Second of all, I do apologize if at some stage my audio gets kind of lost or whatever, distracted, because my microphone sat in the was on summer vacation and then said, well, I mean, why bother coming back? I'm just not coming back. So it's like really the last resort we're going here with. And before we get into all action of the Zweite Bundesliga, the Bundesliga return on the weekend, and although we luckily don't have to talk about all that, there was one incident where I quickly want to chat about, and that was at the game between Wolfsburg and Werder, where the Werder fans were really, really looking forward to the first game back in the Bundesliga, and then a majority of at least the ultra scene didn't actually went to see the game because the police actions at Wolfsburg main station were, let's just say, not really something they've expected or which is common to do. YouTube heads up at this stage to the Grün-Weiße Hilfe. If you're a Werder fan, go check that out. They help you with everything concerning fan rights away from home, for example. And then also to the Werder president, who said in an interview at Sky and also in a own Werder TV kind of interview that this is not what they discussed before the game, because obviously both clubs and the police always discuss, is this is a high-risk game, do we have any kind of problems? And no offense to either Wolfsburg or Werder, but if you look at that game, this is not a high-risk game. This is what they discussed. They kind of labeled it green on a green, yellow, red kind of mark. And so they were very irritated why they stood there like for 3 hours, weren't allowed to go to the toilet. They were kind of, they had to undress until their undergarments kind of, and then had to be checked. And we know this is like fan rights. This is not how it works. There is an El Freunde article up. I pronounced his name correctly, André Reisin. He talks to a Werder fan anonymously, kind of, to Andreas Hüttl, who knows all things fan rights and rights in general, and just a couple of people who know this, so go check that out. I was kind of reminded of when St. Pauli was in Bielefeld and like similar stuff happened, that they were just being held They weren't allowed to go to the toilet for 3-4 hours. This is not how you handle fans, no matter what they have might have done in the past, especially because we kind of all said during the COVID pandemic, or it's still happening, obviously, but with the harsh restrictions and with people protesting those restrictions, that we want to be handled like this as football fans. And if they have a new approach, and as soon as football kind of returned with fans, it was clear it's not a new approach. They're just being handled differently than football fans, because apparently we're the worst thing that could happen to a country or to a city. If you're traveling away on the weekend or in general this season, make sure you know your rights, make sure you know your contacts to your fan projects. They do fantastic work. You always have people to talk to, like talk to your clubs, hopefully with pressure from the clubs themselves. The police has to change something, because this is not how football fans should be treated, period.
Amen to that. And you mentioned like how police tend to govern football fans completely differently. Maybe they should govern, I don't know, politicians in such a manner, because some of the worst people in the world happen to be, I don't know, leaders of countries, people that have the most power. But hey, humble football fans who just want to cheer their team on, what are the rights? Interesting. Eva also mentioned about her microphone taking a summer break. I think Hanover might also be feeling that they should have had an extended summer break, because it has been a pretty rough start to life under Stefan Leitl, and it was no different in Paderborn at the home Deluxe Arena. 4-2 the final score in the end. Hanover had a lead twice in this. Harvard Nielsen opened the scoring when Van der Werf and Yannick Hood collected each other, and Nielsen casually just walked the ball in. Then Hanover felt really generous and gave up a goal through Luka Krajnc, an own goal. He was at the wrong place at the wrong time, as he is Ron Schallenberg's header found Krajnc, and he put it into his own net. And then Cedric Toikert got his first goal of the season on 37 minutes to give Hanover the second lead, and it seemed like Hanover had some sort of ascendancy going into the break, but they were completely dominated in the second half, and it started with a Marvin Peering goal. He followed up from his hat-trick in the cup. He's, of course, on loan from Schalke. Could be a very nifty move for them. And then Ron Schallenberg scored on 60 minutes on the hour mark when the initial free kick was fumbled by Ron Robert Zieler. Schallenberg first onto the scene, and he put the ball into the back of the net. And finally, Felix Platter got his third goal of the campaign, a Jonas Karls cross pass from Conte. Platter puts in the back of the net. It was on a platter for Felix, and he had no... yeah, that's a bad one. Sorry. So 3 goals for Platter this season. He's their top scorer. But Paderborn, 2 wins from home. Something they didn't do a lot last season was win at home, but it definitely may seem that the name change, the Holmes Deluxe Arena, has worked fruitful. 2 wins for them, and they looked very comfortable in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure about this game. In a way, it was a typical Paderborn game where a lot of goals and a lot of things happening. And in the end, you, as a neutral, you're quite entertained, maybe even impressed by what Paderborn put on. But I mean, especially if you look at the first half, lot of things happening here. Hanover probably with the better start. Paderborn rather unlucky. Then not teams not being able to defend set pieces is a thing for this match day. I can at least, out of the top of my head, name 3 teams who weren't really good at this. And I mean, what I wasn't sure about how after the half, or into the start of the second half, where Hanover obviously kind of had the momentum because they were 2-1 up, and then they completely lost it. Like, I mean, Piringer had an amazing game, but just everything that happened here, I'm not sure what Zieler did then. if you look at the 4-2, Ondua doesn't put any pressure on Karls, who can easily make this cross to find Felix Platter in the end. And it was so, so weird because Hannover wasn't bad in the first half. And they, as I mentioned, they had the momentum. And you know, one thing you shouldn't let Paderborn not do is like getting their thing rolling. And this is, we've seen it in the past that Paderborn is able to quickly, not only this season, but last season as well, switch a game to their advantage. And once again, in 8 minutes, they changed the whole sub, or they just changed everything, how this game was being set up. So obviously, if you have an XG of 5.28, you're the deserved winner, but they're also the deserved winner just on how good they were coming out of the halftime and just completely overran Hannover in the second half. And they always, I mean, they scored a 3-2 already, which was then being taken away due to a foul, I think. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, heads up to Paderborn. Amazing performance. Really good performance at home as well. I know this was the problem. You kind of teased this. It was a problem last season. And, yeah, for Hannover, I mean, we kind of spoke about this as soon as Lytle was being appointed head coach, but also in our season preview. We weren't sure about how everything would be kind of developing if the first three games or the first couple of games would not play out exactly as fans and team might hope. I mean, once again, we have a huge mix-up with the whole Kin thing. We're still hoping to speak with an expert about this, so we're kind of still thinking about this, so maybe in a couple of weeks you get a Hannover special. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't help that the surroundings of the club aren't really calm. And obviously this is something that every club has a problem with. Obviously with the long transfer window, it's very, very difficult to really measure what is happening at the moment. I mean, if you look at what's happening in the Bundesliga, we see that, for example, with Dortmund's new striker being out due to a horrible diagnosis, they have bought Modest, and now Köln is looking for a new player, for example, at Darmstadt or at Fürth. So, and then they search for new players. So everything we see has to be with a like really, really big question mark, because we really don't know how the squad will develop throughout this month, actually. So, yeah. But I think we can see probably not how Hannover planned this, and it's not going to get easy on the weekend when they play Regensburg, who we know is in a good shape now, or although, I mean, we come to their game on the weekend soon, or towards the end of this podcast, actually. But yeah, I don't know about Hannover for Paderborn. I'm actually really, really looking forward to that game against Kaiserslautern. I think it's going to be lots of goals, actually. It's probably going to end 0-0 now that I've said this.
No.
But actually a game I would highly recommend watching, because I think it's going to be, a good and entertaining football game.
Yeah, one player that I really am starting to enjoy watching, Sir Lloyd Conte. I love his pace, get him on the break. And even though they took his goal away, can just see how dangerous he just makes defenders get really indecisive. No problem with it being overturned. It was quite clearly a foul. I mean, he practically body checked him with his backside, and and saved Zila from being rounded twice in the one game. But Yeah, no, they're a really fun team to watch, and we spoke about it on Match Day 1 when Florian Senga was here, the creativity they've got out wide with Justvan, who again had, I think, a couple of assists. They're just a good team, and they've got a bit of depth. You know, they've got Pieringer. If Pieringer's not working, they've got Platter. They've got Sabeni, who hit the woodwork in this game. And yeah, things look good for them. With Hanover, I just don't think they've found the balance yet with a new manager. And we know there are a couple of teams we're going to talk about later on where they've got new managers. And like, it's going to take time. The discourse of, oh, well, if they don't win in the next two, that we should send him to the sun. Let's relax, people. You know, it's three games in, and yes, there is expectations, but let's give someone time to at least install their philosophy, especially when you consider that practically when the season ended, a minute later, training camp had started, and bam, July 15, we are back. So it's been a shortened preseason. It should be expected that nothing is going to really be perfect. Some teams have got it right straight off the bounce. Other teams haven't, but it's going to take time. And, you know, let's just see what happens. And if we come here in at the end of the month and Hanover are winless, then let's have the conversation. But till now, let's just wait and see. As Eva mentioned, Hanover have Jan Regensburg on the Sunday and Paderborn, Kaiserslautern. And that's at the Betze on Friday. Speaking of Kaiserslautern, let's talk about them. They had St. Pauli on Sunday. This game was broadcast world feed. It was here in Australia on BN Sports, which was, yeah, we love to see it. Bit of Jackson Irvine action is you never frown upon. But Kaiserslautern reminded everyone that, well, Dirk Schuster is a madman, and he loves causing chaos, and this one was no different. A 2-1 win for Kaiserslautern. They've won both of their games at home by the same margin. Just under 40,000 made their way to the Fritz Walter Stadion to see Kaiserslautern win 2-1. Your goal scorers, Terence Boyd on 9 minutes, and then Kenny Prince Redondo. Good counter-attacking goal. We'll talk about the goalkeeping a bit in a moment, but we probably should have saved that. Jakub Minic actually scored a really good goal 2 minutes after the Redondo goal, but no late-game heroics this time for St. Pauli. It drops them to 11th on the table. One win, one draw, one loss. Kaiserslautern, one of two sides yet to lose this season. Two wins and a draw. They currently sit second. So, Eva, what should we talk about? Because I really enjoyed what Kaiserslautern were doing on the break. They were very good in transition, created some high-quality chances. There is an argument that the man with the pyramid eye on tattoo on his forearm probably should have scored a hat-trick because he had a few really good chances in this game. But they are showing, especially at home, they are a very, very dangerous side to play.
Yeah, and I mean, I was really impressed on how much pressure Kaiserslautern put on St. Pauli in the first 20 to 25 minutes of the first half. I mean, you could probably split that first half in two halves itself. The first 20 to 25 minutes, Kaiserslautern was basically pushing St. Pauli into their own half, didn't let them come to their box at all. Had plenty of chances through Boyd. I mean, just that first goal, the way Durm and Zimmer perform on the right side is amazing to watch. Really liked Zimmer back in the Dritte Liga, but in general, I think it's good that he's back in the Zweite Bundesliga. I like a lot of what he is doing. I'm sorry. And then after 25 minutes, you had a very enormous switch to actually St. Pauli pushing Kaiserslautern very, very deep into their own half. And then I think Daschner with a chance to level and then really reversed roles here. I thought in the first half, the chances St. Pauli created, they were more due to Kaiserslautern kind of having a lack of getting a grip of what St. Pauli was trying to do. I really loved the switch to Matanovic in the second half for St. Pauli. He really made an impact to the game, although he didn't score, but just he was involved in nearly every attack that was happening by St. Pauli in the second half. But what they didn't really do is putting that dominance that they had towards the end of the first half and probably even majority of the beginning of the second half onto the score sheet, because they obviously had something to do with Andreas Lute being the experienced goalkeeper he is, and then Matanovic being quite young player, maybe probably not always having the self-confidence or just the experience to score that goal. Luita was brilliant against him twice, at least, in my opinion. And then it was, again, the boy time where he should have scored the 2-0 once again. And then, but it was Matondo, where I wasn't sure what Chuigala. I wouldn't put this one on Smash, though. Mm. I would put it on Chuigala, who is also out now for a couple of weeks for St. Pauli because he was injured. He doesn't put any kind of pressure, lets him do whatever he wants in that situation. And then in the end, obviously, you had, this is worse, but this is the second team I want to speak about concerning how not to defend a corner or a set piece. It was a hearted corner. And then you basically have Medic, and around him, there is just 1 or 2 meters circling him. Nobody. And I mean, it's not even a header. He can just score with his foot from there. And although it was enough for Kaiserslautern, but it would have been very unfortunate if that would have meant that Kaiserslautern wouldn't win, because this was not, like, no offense to neither Medic nor not Harter's corner, but this was not some, like, this was not due amazing St. Pauli counter-attack or attacking in general, but it was because Kaiserslautern didn't defend that set piece properly. Also, Medic is also one of the guys you might not see in the Zweite Bundesliga for long, because Stuttgart wants him. I don't know who else they want to get from the Zweite Liga. They already got Luka Pfeiffer, and he doesn't play. And if you... I'm not sure what they want with yet another player from the Zweite Bundesliga. But yeah, nevertheless, it deserved win for Kaiserslautern in the end, because yeah, when it was needed, they used their chances, which St. Pauli didn't. I mean, yeah, they got a new goalkeeper now, Sascha Burchard, who we know joins from Fürth. I think it's not really helping the whole situation there. You have a stand-in keeper because your first choice keeper is out, you having a broken finger, I think. And then you get someone in who was being kind of degraded from a club where he was number one for a couple of years. And now you get him in, and in the end, you're three goalkeepers. One of them is probably very pissed. But I mean, I want to say this was that they lost this game was not his fault. But yeah, I don't know what it is with St. Pauli and kind of having the most fluctuation in goalkeeping positioning I have seen for a couple of years. They had, like, I don't know for sure, but they had at least 6 different goalkeepers in like 5 years. So yeah, I'm not sure about this, but if it helps them in the end, they don't have an easy task coming up with Magdeburg. This is not going to be easy, although they play at home. But yeah, I mean, they kind of need to get into the game from the first minute on, otherwise it's going to be We've seen what Magdeburg, although they've lost, we've seen what Magdeburg can do. And let's see.
Yeah, the goalkeeping conundrum is an interesting one, and it was one that Sportshell, in their highlights package, were more than happy to acknowledge from the outset. The only reason why I think they bring in Boyka is there's two reasons: that either Vasil's injury is long term and it's really become an issue, or Vasil is on his way out and that there's someone that's going to try and is looking to purchase. You know, you bring in Boyka, who's got plenty of Zweite Bundesliga experience. And I think the Smash experience in general has been pretty chaotic. If you look at the three games he's played, there have been just a lot of moments where you're like, I'm not so certain he's the guy. Nothing personal, of course, but just as just kind of looking at it. I think I'll be interested to see if Timo Schulz does back Smash in, or he brings in Boykert, who hasn't played, I think, since 2021 properly. So we'll see. But I wasn't a fan of Daschner playing up top alongside Eggestein. I think he's a lot more suited to play the number 10 role. They put Bukalfa in there and it didn't really work for portions. But we'll see. We'll see what they can do. Of course, as Eva said, they've got Magdeburg, and as we mentioned before, Kaiserslautern are hosting Paderborn on Friday night, which should be a really, really good game. And now we move to the top spieler of the match day, Hansa Rostock and Arminia Bielefeld. It has to be said, we have to talk about them. 24,300 made their way to the Ostseestadion to see a pretty interesting game of football, it has to be said. Bielefeld, of course, looking to build on their cup win, whereas Rostock, who were beaten by Lübeck in the cup, hoping to get back to winning ways. Of course, Rostock won their last game in the league, 1-0 to Hamburg, so they were hoping that they could bring that winning feeling back to their home arena. And they were gift-wrapped an opening goal when Yakul's attempted long ball was promptly intercepted. Jean Verhoek eventually finding Kai Proger, and Proger putting the ball into the back of the net, and it was 1-0. Just before halftime, Bielefeld did wrestle some sort of control. They had a couple of chances through Okugawa, but it remained fruitless at the break. But Bielefeld got going in the second half, and just 3 minutes in, Yanni Serra got his Zweite Bundesliga scoring tally underway when he beats Marcus Kolke. And then Bielefeld kind of went missing for about half an hour. They didn't register a shot from the 55th minute to the 85th minute, and it so happened that on minute 86, Rostock would take the decisive blow. The corner coming in, headed by Lucas Frueda, and Damian Rosbach probably couldn't believe his luck when him and two other Rostock players were in on goal. As much as Carpino's advances did some to maybe thwart, Rosbach put it through to the back of the net. It means that Rostock win back-to-back games, and Bielefeld remain winless. They are rooted to 17th on the table. Let's get a Bielefeld perspective. Eva, it was, not a great game to watch typically for a Sunday kickoff, as much as you already have to deal with Torsten Matuschka for 90 minutes, but Bielefeld showed glimpses of what they can do, but ultimately it was the individual errors that proved fatal in the game.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, I said this on Twitter on the weekend, I have a lot of patience, but that performance was, to everyone who traveled to Rostock, I mean, I know they started at like 9 a.m. on Saturday, they were home at 6 a.m. on Sunday morning, with having to, also the police there and stuff, and the very long journey as well, like 10 hours. They sat in a bus for 10 hours on Saturday. And then you see this. Just in general, it's everything we saw. I mean, obviously never overanalyze preseason games, but what you can see is tendencies. The pressing was really good in the games against Eindhoven and Piraeus. Just the formation, the movement of the team was good. The three in the back worked. And then you start the season and nothing, like, for to switch back to four for the game against Rostock, which some fans thought would solve every solution. Spoiler, it did not. And then you had no pressing at all. It started towards the beginning of the second half, which actually is like, then you got a goal. Yay. But yeah, I mean, I do feel sorry for Jekyll. I was at the training ground yesterday and it looked like this was one of the tasks yesterday, finding solutions with pressure, because we were playing Hamburg on the weekend and in their game against Heidenheim, you could kind of see that they were trying really high pressing at some stages in the first half. And you need to find solutions for that. And I mean, it fits together that one of the players was out because he was not taken to the, or he was not in the squad because he was late for breakfast before training. One of the players was subbed in later because he had a wrong shorts under his shorts. So that fits together. At the moment, it doesn't help. It doesn't help that then the coach is standing there and says, well, I saw some improvements in the second half. So, great thing. This is basically, once again, compared to the Sandhausen game as well, we were one man down. But if you score the equalizer, just don't stop there. Keep going. You have the quality to keep going. I mean, we have a new player in Lucas Klünter, a former Hertha player. He is a right back or right center back, which fits better to his role if he, for example, plays in the three in the back. Also, hats up to media outlets who covered this game. If you have Materia, next to him was Kasper. They're best buddies, but he is also a musician. He's just not standing there as his bodyguard. He is a good rapper. We know him, in my opinion, better rapper than Materia is. But well, he's from Bielefeld, so I'm a bit biased, but also he makes very good music. Probably, I mean, Rostock wasn't good in the second half either. General didn't do much before they hit like the 85th mark. In the end, it also fit that the ref showed that there is going to be a corner. And as soon as everyone was positioned for that corner, he blew the whistle to end the game. Doesn't really make sense. In the end, deserved win for Rostock, nevertheless. Bielefeld just did two less. They should have, like, had the feeling that the majority of real attempts were towards the end of the first half, obviously, with Okugawa and Husing, who should have let the ball through to Jekyll. In general, they have to up their game. The thing I'm a bit confident about is that this is the first game on the weekend where they're not the favorites, like, no matter that they're the relegated team from the Bundesliga. Hamburg, just name-wise, is the bigger team. Also, table positioning, obviously. But this is the first game this season where they're not being picked as the favorites to win the game, and maybe they can use that for their advantage, because this is more similar to what they had to endure in the Bundesliga, that they're kind of the underdogs, and they're positioned the underdogs. But the two games after that, Heidenheim away from home at the Voigt Arena, and then Eintracht Braunschweig Friday night game, this is going to be huge, and it wouldn't help if you don't have no points at all at this stage, because then you get like time and patience, all that. But yeah, it's difficult. And also, once again, congrats to Hansa. They used Bielefeld's mistake very wisely, and that's why they they deserve to win.
Yeah, it was a difficult game in general, especially late in the, like midway through the second half, the game kind of hit a lull. And I will say that the subs that Jens Hartl brought on in Schumacher, Schroeter and Lucas Hintz, I only just remembered he was playing for them when I was watching the game. And you know, they at least sort of turned the tide a little bit into their favour. And in the end, it was a set piece goal that was enough to get Hansa the 3 points. And yeah, as we know, the noise tends to get a little bit louder when you go forever longer without a result. So yeah, big couple of weeks coming up for Arminia Bielefeld. For Hansa, they are at Darmstadt, then they've got St. Pauli, then Karlsruhe, and that's their end of their month. Let's take a break. And Eva did mention Hamburg, and they are going to be top of the rank for Group 2 when they hosted Heidenheim. To the Volksparkstadion we go. It's Hamburg and Heidenheim. Hamburg were hoping to atone from the defeat last time around to Hansa. Heidenheim hoping to make it 3 wins from 3. There's no wordplay on this one, but Robert Glatzel did in fact make it goal number 3 for the season when on 42 minutes he was able to nod home Miro Mulheim's cross, and that was the only goal we saw. Hamburg had their chances. In fact, they had a second through Ransford Yeboah Königsdorfer, but he couldn't curve his run. He was flagged offside. He also rounded the goalkeeper. There was a lot of goalkeeper roundings this match day, and as a member of the goalkeepers' union, that's not good enough. Goalkeepers, don't let players round you. If they're going to get past you, just bring them down. They miss penalties. It happens. Anyway, Hamburg certainly seemed the more likely, despite having a pretty un-Hamburg-type performance, or an un-Tim Walter-type performance. For the first time this season, they failed to have 50% possession, and they attempted less than 400 passes. What gives? Usually, we know that there are plus 500 attempted and at least 60-plus percent. So they had to do it the hard way. They had their chances. But in the end, it didn't matter. They got the result, a crucial win for them. And of course, they've got a big game coming up on Saturday afternoon. So what was the big takeaway for Hamburg in the end? As we've critiqued over the past year and a bit, they have been one-dimensional. But this time, they had to be a bit gritty. And in the end, they got the result.
Yeah, I thought actually in the end it was unnecessarily close, because to be honest, I mean, we towards the end of last season we had the same match up actually with Hamburg at home, Heidenheim away, where we kept saying, well, I mean, it's Heidenheim away from home, what should happen? And then Heidenheim actually put up a decent performance, didn't get the win in the end. So probably this was still a bit in their heads, or in both heads. And I did like what Ham was doing. They came more of the wings and then were looking for the crosses to find Glatzer. He should have scored earlier in this game. Not really sure what he did there. But yeah, you have to talk about how freely Heidenheim let the cross givers be. Mulheim for the goal, obviously, but before, no matter if left or right side, they could stand there 10-15 meters in front of the box and just think about for, I don't know, 10 seconds where to cross the ball to, and that definitely shouldn't happen. It was a bit better in the second half, but it was a very good, especially the last line of defending for Hamburg was very solid, although they had some hiccups in the lines before that, that Heidenheim could break through. The last line of defending, including Daniel Hoyer Fernandez, was very solid, very good standing there. And I mean, as mentioned, I thought that especially towards the end. We've seen this in the past, that Hamburg has the chances, but doesn't use them, and that's why on the score sheet it looks very close, but in my opinion, it actually wasn't. I mean, you had that Bibia chance in the end where I still don't know why that wasn't in. But yeah, I think this was a typical, probably frustrating for Frank Schmidt, a typical away performance by Heidenheim where they couldn't really bring on the pitch what they wanted. They just had one single shot on target, which is just can be enough, but mostly it is not. And in a way, I thought this game was a bit similar to the Rostock game, because Hamburg had the chances, but you had an opponent here who just didn't put enough on the plate to actually, yeah, in a way, make them regret that they didn't use all of them. And yeah, as mentioned, when he was needed, Hoyer Fernandez was there, and that's why in the end, I think it was a good win for them. They probably still have to use more of their chances. Coming at least two of the three next games against Darmstadt and Nuremberg, Bielefeld, I'm just going to cut out here. I spoke to a couple of Hamburg guys now. They're not really looking forward to the game on Saturday as well. I don't know why. Most of the times Hamburg won against us, so, well, don't be afraid, I guess. And I think I'm interested to see where this Hamburg route is taking them. Not overly convinced by everything they're doing, but they had worse games at home, and they managed to do the task they were required to do.
Yeah, job's good. They've only conceded once this season, which is ideal. They haven't scored a lot of goals, only just the three. Twice how much they won, just a single here. But yeah, they were resilient. I thought their set piece defending was really good, considering Heidenheim had 15 corners for this game, which is incredible that Heidenheim didn't do anything with those set pieces at all. So yeah, I thought Heidenheim were just a little bit disappointing. Came out a bit flat, lacked that energy, and you know, yeah, I was really for them. Jan Nicklas Bester was good. Really liked his influence. I mean, he's been pretty good for them in their first three games. But yeah, they were on the back foot for a lot. It felt like they were on the back foot despite having more of the ball. But yeah, Hamburg probably should have won this game 3 or 4-0. You obviously have the Königsdorf VAR no goal, and then Meinke had that unbelievably good tackle on the 1-on-1. I think it might have been Königsdorfer again. Bill Beer, obviously, he missed that chance, and Glatzel probably should have had a hat-trick. And, you know, on another day, you don't win those games. But fortunately for Hamburg, in this case, they took the 3 points. As mentioned, Bielefeld host Hamburg. Heidenheim, they travel to Nuremberg on Friday night. Now let's move way south. We're heading to Bavaria. Skrøderfurt and Karlsruhe. This was a Friday night game. This game ended a goal apiece. Not much happened in the first half. Then the second half, things started to progress. Ragnar Ake opened his account with a really, really good goal on 57 minutes. But it was all for naught in the end when Usama Haddadi handled the ball in the box. It was a tight decision, but I think many would agree that it was the correct decision. Marvin Vanitsek put the ball in the back of the net. Karlsruhe thought they'd won the game on 78 minutes when Vanitsek put the ball in the back of the net again. However, Jerome Gondorf this time was offside. It was a fraction, but it was, again, the correct call. At least they got the correct calls on Friday. We won't talk about Sunday afternoon when they forgot how to use their system. So, in the end, it was a goal apiece, but surprisingly, there were whistles and boos at the end of the game from the Fürth supporters. Sporting director Rashid Azouzi was not amused by the fact that after their performance, not a great performance, but was not particularly pleased with the reception post-match. Even this was not one for... This was one for the purists, those who enjoy those really defensive tight tussles where chances are at a premium, and taking them really can progress the game. But this is the second time this season at home for Fürth where they have been in a winning position and they have given up a penalty, which has led to a draw. And in this case, they were very lucky not to be on the losing end of this ledger.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I mean, this game really, like, from every pore it had, that it was a game between two sides who were very unsure where they stand. If you look at both offensive attempts, there is a lot of searching for partners up front. There is a lot of individual errors throughout the game from both sides. There is a lot of taking away the pace, taking away the kind of happiness in playing, a lot of just being unsure what to do. I think Fürth had like two or three attempts where they just had a shot on goal, but it just went past the post for like one or at least 1 meter left or right. And it was a very difficult game to watch. I wouldn't even say it was a defensive masterclass by both sides. It was just the lack of being able to use individual errors from both sides. Second half was a bit better to watch. It was a really good combination by Ache and Hogota. Good, another player where we don't know whether he is going to stay on. And yeah, in the end, when the penalty was given, it was a correct decision. It was like deserved for the score sheet. I wasn't sure at that stage. Looked at least at this point that Fürth did a bit more. But honestly, in my opinion, this could have been a typical 0-0 game at this stage as well. Karlsruhe then in the end did a bit more, but all in all, yeah, I think both sides can't really complain about the point here, because it was just not a good game to watch. And it was just the first half was a disaster class, everything footballing. And you see for both Fürth and Bielefeld, they have very similar problems with having defensive errors at the same time, not really being able to replicate or really, yeah, even that out with having a good offensive attack. So yeah, and it's for Fürth especially, it's not going to get easier if they play Düsseldorf on Sunday afternoon or noon. Karlsruhe against Sandhausen. I mean, I think they might be probably happy that they don't play Sandhausen away at Sandhausen. But Sandhausen will come with a huge self-confidence, with two Kinsami brothers who are in a good mood, with a normally a number 6 who plays a number 10 in Yannick Bachmann. And just, yeah, I'm not sure. I don't really see good cards being dealt here for Karlsruhe. So yeah, not sure they're in both teams. Not sure this point helped them finding their way this season so far. So yeah,
there you go, fortunes have been told. One thing I will say about Karlsruhe is that they were very grateful to have Marius Gersbeck between the sticks on the weekend. They definitely seemed a little bit more organized defensively. They're continuing with the back four that shipped the most goals in the division, but they definitely seemed a little bit more organized. He pulled off a really good save late in the game as well, to deny Simon Atsa. So yeah, important result, I guess, for Karlsruhe to get on the board this season. But yeah, I think both teams can be almost forgiven for the fact that they are still really figuring, as Eva said, their identity is still to be determined, especially with new strikers. And you know, you look at Ake and Zeeb, never played together, you know, first time really going at it. And then you've got Simona Rapp and they had Schleusner. I would have gone with Kaufmann, but you know, that's why Christian Eichner is getting paid to coach, and I'm here not getting paid to just talk. So yeah, we'll see. Both important games, and both, you know, two of the five sides in the division that have yet to pick up a win so far. Now let's head to Magdeburg. They host Holstein Kiel on the weekend at just over 19,500 made their way to the MDCC Arena. Couldn't have got off to a worse start for Magdeburg. They conceded on 17 minutes from a set piece. Marco Komenda got the opening goal of the game. Now, Magdeburg should have equalised just after the half hour when Boris Attic found Jason Checker, who found Connor Krumpecki. And Krumpecki with an incredible miss with Thomas Dana completely out of the picture, the entirety of the goal at his mercy, and he punted the ball out of the stadium. Horror miss. So Jason Checker took it onto his own accord and said, if you can't do it, then I shall. And just before the break, he opened Magdeburg's account for the game. Moritz Kwarteng's brilliant ball found Jason Checker, and Checker gets goal number one. But Magdeburg had a pretty funny game. We'll talk about James Lawrence in a moment. James plays for Nürnberg now. Jamie Lawrence, on loan from Bayern Munich. There we go. He was given a yellow card for diving in the first half, and we'll talk about it in a moment. Could have been a penalty. There might have been contact. I don't know. I'm not a video assistant referee. Anyway, he then gave away a penalty when he fouled Steven Skripski, and referee Tim Ogurish decided that that deserved a second yellow. He was sent off. Benedikt Pickler converts from the spot. Goal number one for him this season, and win number one for Holstein Kiel. They hold on to get their first win of the season. This game had a bit of everything in terms of pretty meek defending, some interesting question marks in terms of the refereeing decisions. It just must have been Sunday, I guess. Should Lawrence... I guess the question should be, should Lawrence have been given the yellow for the initial incident? And then was there enough to really suggest that it should have been a penalty for Kiel? Because it seems really tight that he almost simultaneously gets the ball and Skripski's foot at the same time. I don't know what you think about it, but I guess the real question is, should Jamie Lawrence have been sent off in this game?
In my opinion, he should not have been sent off. I mean, the first incident where he is being fouled, it's not a penalty for me, but it's not a pure dive either, but because a contact is there. And we see this like week in, week out, that the players do this to kind of attract attention from the spectators in the stadium, in front of the TV, from the ref. So it wasn't a clear dive for me because there is a contact. At the same time, I think he just looks very unlucky in the situation with Skripski. I thought it was quite funny that the Sportschau commentator who was doing the highlights for this game was like, well, I mean, he has shoe size 50, so don't give the penalty, more or less. Yeah, no, if you have those long feet, do not emerge from 1 second to another. You should probably still know how to handle them. I think if you see both scenes, this is the one where you should give the penalty, probably. But if the ref doesn't blow the whistle here, can't really be overruled with the VAR, in my opinion, because it's not a clear mistake in both instances, actually, how the decision was being made. But once again, you shouldn't have gotten a yellow card for the first one, for the dive. So yeah, should not have been sent off. I really quickly want to touch on that goal by Magdeburg because I thought it was quite interesting. I had the feeling that Kiel was kind of expecting that Kwarteng is going to pass it in the depth to Artic, who was kind of running behind him, and Kwarteng looks up very quickly, sees Cheka, and I really like the movement of Cheka in that instance, and he turns like half around himself and then scores the goal. Really, really good. They have a very good idea of going forward if it works with Cheka, with Artic, with Kwarteng. That was well. I mean, it's mentioned that Krempiki chance, I'm not sure how that didn't went in. It's, he can join a group with Bibia probably. I mean, and especially in the second half, or for the majority of the time, I thought it was a fun game to watch. It was always switching momentums from the one to the other. In the end, Kia just really used probably the mistake, or however you want to call it, but I think nevertheless, one thing I really love to see, or what Magdeburg had problems with, if we talk about another team having problems with defending set pieces, those set pieces by Arp finding Pichla are a weapon. Something we probably didn't really think about last season. I don't really remember Arp taking the corners. I don't know about you. I mean, I can be mistaken, but this was really in my head. And obviously, although Pichler doesn't score the goal from a corner, it's Commander, but because the ball is deflected and then the positioning for and the order isn't there for Magdeburg for the goal. So this is probably something we might see a bit more often by Kiel, Arp finding Pichler with the with a set piece, with a corner, that worked two or three times in this game where Magdeburg definitely had problems defending that, which led to at least one goal for Kiel.
Yeah, so you are right. He doesn't, Arp doesn't usually take corners, usually Fabian Riese, but he was out with health and safety protocols. And you don't all usually see Jan Fiete Arp playing wingback. I thought he was really good there. It was peculiar. So maybe he's been playing out of position all along. Who knows? But I thought he had a really good game, and really complimented the two up top, and an important win for them, because there's some doubts. They're question marks, like every other team in the league. There are question marks, but with Kiel, that like just there's a genuine uncertainty of what this team can be, but yeah, they look good going forward. They took their chances and job's good. They get the 3 points. Magdeburg, yeah, they couldn't do a whole lot when they went down to 10 men. They seemed a bit hamstrung a little bit, and well, they've got a chance to atone. That tough game at St. Pauli, Kiel host Braunschweig, and that will be an interesting game as well. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll talk about the final three games of match day three, and we'll take a gander at how everyone was going in the kick tip. Sandhausen were hoping to take another scalp at home when they hosted Fortuna Düsseldorf on Friday night. A game that had much intrigue, as Fortuna were hoping to make it 3 wins from 3. Well, Sandhausen were hoping to get back to winning ways. A first half which was dominated by Fortuna, with multiple chances. David Kudnowski had the best of the chances, but his shot was deflected in the end by Tommy Tribal. After the break, it was, well, one team was caught napping. Understandable at that time. It was a lovely evening. It would have been perfect for a nap. But Dusseldorf, all 11 of them were caught napping when Chima Okoroji found Yannick Bachmann, and the one and only goal scored in this game goes to Sandhausen. Fortuna almost stole a point. Daniel Kinchek's effort right at the death was brilliantly saved by Patrick Drues, who had another outstanding game. And Sandhausen make it 2 from 2 at home. Fortuna succumbs to its first defeat of the season. Eva, you are all too aware of Sandhausen's home form. Yep, that, well, I would have deserved that one. They held firm defensively in this game. They really limited the quality of chances that Fortuna Düsseldorf had, and they were, for me anyway, they did enough to get the 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, in the first half, what I really liked about Düsseldorf is how they were present in the duels. In the first half, you had the feeling every deciding duel that was really changing anything on the pitch was going to Düsseldorf. They were very physical, really taking that on. They had, I think, 7-0 shots in the first half, or at least at some stage in the first half. And yeah, I mean, then as you mentioned, they came out in very, or Sandhausen were really present or had the perfect start into the second half. I really like that Polkopp lets the ball through to Bachmann, mentioning already that he normally plays, like, from nature on, he is a number six, but plays number 10 for Sandhausen. He's always very dangerous for scoring goals. And then, I mean, more or less good defending by Sandhausen, at least. Then Drewes was there when the rest of the team wasn't. And then, yeah, Kovnatski with the best chance for Düsseldorf twice. On the other hand, Tribo with the 2-0. I mean, Kastenmeier was really good in goal as well. Yep. This one goal wasn't his fault, so this was one game of excellent goalkeeping on both sides, in my opinion. And as you've mentioned, that attempt by Ginchek in the end, amazing, amazing save by Drewes. In the first, when I saw it first, I thought Ginchek just doesn't hit the ball correctly, so it goes past. But then if you see the repetition of that scene, it's clear that Drewes is the one to thank there. And I mean, we've seen that Sandhausen, they don't need to be the better team for 90 minutes, but we just know that because they stand so well in defending, they know what their task is, that if they have two or three chances up front, this might be enough for them to get all 3 points. And that's why they managed to win here, and it's not completely undeserved. I mean, probably Düsseldorf really bites their nails for that first half, that they didn't use their chances a bit better. I mean, in the end, Ruven Hennings had to solve more defending tasks than offensive tasks. So, yeah, I mean, heads up to Sandhausen. It's a good season so far for them, although we're all only 3 match days in. But nevertheless, just kind of not looking too much on the game against Darmstadt. But otherwise, at home, they know what they can do. And we know that from last season, so it's not really surprising. But nevertheless, this is why I didn't pick them as my favorites to get down this season. Because when they mastered the defending task, they can already always just have 2-3 highlights in their game, and that might be enough, and it was enough in this game.
Yeah, they know how to really strangle teams defensively in the second half. They really tightened the screws, especially getting that early goal 45 seconds into the second half. Fortuna really had to struggle to make good chances. We did see that for the first time this season, I think, Daniel Thun went with a back three, playing all three, Clara, Hoffman and De Vrij, and it worked in the first half, but when they needed to be a bit more on the offensive, they switched to a back four, and yeah, they just really struggled to make hay with quality chances in the second half, and I think they just didn't do enough to get a result. But Greuther Fürth at home, winnable game for them, and obviously we've mentioned Sandhausen are at Karlsruhe, tricky game, but should be an interesting. Both teams have all to play for. Now let's move to the Eintracht Stadion. Eintracht Braunschweig took on Darmstadt. Braunschweig were hoping to replicate the magic of beating Hertha BSC in the Cup when they hosted Darmstadt. It was a homecoming for Thorsten Lieberknecht. of course, he coached Braunschweig to the Bundesliga, then all the way down to the Zweite Bundesliga, and we know the story. Braunschweig had Anthony Uja on the bench. They were hoping he would get some sort of playing time. He did, but not much of note with that. Darmstadt had a mega second half. They really turned the screws. They had a penalty when Marvin Millen was fouled by Yasmin Fasic. Philip Teeps steps up, and it's saved. Fasic made a really good play, atoning for the penalty mistake in the first place. But as the game got on, it just seemed like Darmstadt were going to be the team that takes the 3 points. And in the end, they were, when substitute Oscar Wilhelmsson comes on. He accepts the wonderful through ball. You see Schultz is trying desperately to keep up with the fresh legs of Wilhelmsson. He still has so much to do. And then he chips Fasic. It was ice cold, baby. Great finish. 3 points for Darmstadt. They make it 2 wins in a row. And it's fair to say, Eva, a well-deserved win for De Leon. They turned the screws in the second half, and Braunschweig just couldn't match it.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been very different from the get-go when Jazula really wanted to do anything or everything to score an own goal. Schoen was not particularly impressed by that action. No, but like towards the end of the first half, Darmstadt already got more dangerous. Braunschweig not really much to offer. Which are not being able to play from the get-go. I have to admit, I forgot about him, that he still existed. Very sorry about that. Once again, I mean, they had only 2 shots on target. Darmstadt had 23 shots on goal. How it then played out is a bit unlucky. But mean heads up to Wilhelmsson with 18-year-old having that much coolness in front of a goalkeeper is quite impressive. Can only help him, can only help Darmstadt going forward. But yeah, I mean, for Braunschweig, it's probably so far the expected difficult start into the season. I mean, they didn't look really being able to win this in any way. Once again, if Behrendt, your center back, has the majority of shots on goal, not the best move. Yeah, in the end, they probably have to thank Fasic, because yeah, he was responsible that the score sheet wasn't higher in the end. But yeah, this time it's not even unlucky for Braunschweig. They just didn't offer enough. And as mentioned, it's the expected difficult season so far. They haven't scored a goal yet. Conceded 6, which is okay. But yeah, nevertheless, it's obviously nothing here is easier. But in 2 weeks' time, they have, or in 3 weeks, I'm sorry, I can't count. Perfect. They have.
Don't say it.
They have this 17th against 18th at this stage against Arminia Bielefeld. So this already can be, for both teams, a very deciding match, at least. Well, it's not going to be a pretty weird game to watch. Don't watch it, please. So, yeah. It's not going to get easier, as mentioned. They're playing Kiel, then they play Düsseldorf, and then they play Bielefeld. So Kiel, I'm actually not sure about, because they tend to do weird stuff in those games. But especially Düsseldorf is going to be, yeah, very difficult picking up points there. Why is that a Saturday night game? Why?
Why not? Electric atmosphere at the Eintracht Stadion. You know, Kivi leading the charge. I mean, I don't see a problem with it, but you know, we'll see what kind of game it produces. But yeah, goalless, 3 defeats, bottom of the table. Only team yet to score this season. Yeah, it's as tough as we thought it would probably be for them, but there's still a long way to go. This is a marathon, not a sprint, and there is plenty of time for them to turn it around. And finally, our last game of the match day brings us to tabletoppers Jan Regensburg and Nürnberg. Now, normally we would put the tabletoppers in Group 1 or 2, but this game just didn't offer a whole lot at all. It was a good goalkeeping game from Dion Stojanovic and Christian Mateña, but yeah, it's an argument that both teams really didn't do enough in this 0-0 to test either goalkeeper. Andreas Albers probably had the best of the chances, the half chances that he blew. Nürnberg were just too harmless in this game, and really just 0-0 the final score. Regensburg remained top. They remained the only team to not concede a goal this season, and they are one of two sides, as we mentioned. They are the other side that are unbeaten. Quick word on this one, Eva, because there's really not a lot to talk about in this game. As in terms of like regional derbies are concerned, there was some atmosphere to the game, just over 15,000. But yeah, this game really offered not a lot for the neutrals and fans alike.
Nope, I would agree. Not happening here. I have basically two bullet points written down for this. This is the scene where I don't know why Hübner takes away his own guy to let Albers then completely ruin that chance. And that Regensburg upped their game a bit in the second half, but all in all, as you've mentioned, it's really fine that this game ended no goals piece, and that we didn't saw a winner here. Especially Nürnberg didn't do much. Regensburg was not efficient enough with the scenes they had, and the goalkeepers had. But this was the second game where you could really say good goalkeeping in the end. So don't know what to say else about this game, actually.
It happened, and I guess what we can say is that James Lawrence, the Welsh international, made his debut for Nürnberg. He started alongside Florian Hübner with Christian Schindler out. And it was interesting, the tactical changes that had to be taken place for Nürnberg. They started Vikessa as a number 10 with Vintseimer and Daferner, and then with Handwerker going out, Vikessa returning to left back, and Vintseimer playing in behind Dua and Daferner. But yeah, despite the amount of attacking options that both teams actually had out on there, it just was so meek. Neither team really looked like they were going to win the game. And even when the opportunities became available, neither team seemingly wanted to take said chances. And in the end, you get pretty disappointing result for either side. I guess it's better than losing, but yeah, it was just a pretty ordinary game for both sides, but they can atone for that on the weekend. Jan Regensburg are heading north. They've got Hanover. They could really apply some more misery for Hanover if they want to. And of course, Nürnberg are hosting Heidenheim on Friday night. Of course, we always talk about our kick tips, so let's get through that swiftly. Robin Nulvia, because, yep, that's definitely the way they go. 17 points. Congrats for being the top scorer for match day 3. And I have to be trying to be really, really humble here. But somehow I'm still leading the kick tips. So, yeah, that's pretty funny. I would like to put it down to that Schalke are not in the division, and I'm not deliberately tanking results so that they would win. But, yeah, that's how it rolls. Thank you for joining us again. It's great to be back after our week break. We are pretty much going all the way through to, I think it's late September, when the international break hits us. So yeah, thanks for being a part of it. We'll be back next Wednesday to discuss all the action from match day 4. Until then, enjoy the action on the pitch and off it, and stay safe, and we look forward to having your company next week.